1957?
Yes, when Ruska was 70, he retired in October, on mm-hmm. October 1st, and I was appointed chairman of the laboratory.
Yes.
As I mentioned that in one of these lectures, by becoming chairman, I reached the level of my incompetence.
Well, no? I doubt that, but that's what you said.
That means, and I tried to step down. You
did
know?
You not like it? Did you not like the no, administrative?
I had really already Professor Ruska organized it in such a way that we had an administrator here, which was a Dr. Engel, Bruno Engel, who took care about all kind of administrative duties, for example, buying apparatus, mm-hmm. chemicals, mm-hmm. organizing everything, and he committed suicide, unfortunately, after a few years. I was satisfied, you know, when I didn't have to sign bills and to control bills and so on. But for some unknown reason, he committed suicide finally. And so I was left more or less. He was very good. So we couldn't replace him because everybody we would put on his place would be judged by the standards he had. So finally I found that I have to do something about that. I dislike it. It's very time consuming, you know, and if you are conscientious, especially, you know, because it was a place with about 200 people, that means staff, PhD candidates, postdoctorals, technicians, and so on. And when you have 200 people, to be a boss of 200 people, you, in some way, you meet statistics. Perhaps not fully, but if there is one or two thieves in 100 people, you will have your thieves. You will have all kinds, you will have your fires, you will have, and then you have to meet police, you have to meet firemen, you may, many other
health
things.
Health rules,
and so on. Even now, it became, during this time,
very
it became
complex.
Always more and more complicated.
Yes, yes, yes.
The responsibility, you know, the mm-hmm. people didn't care, but now they always say the chairman is responsible,
Yes.
For everything what happened. So I dislike that very much. And so we then organized a kind of collegial chairmanship that every year we changed. In between, I achieved that we increased the number of full professors to 8. We had, at a certain moment, first we had 3 professors, and then always more and more, and finally we had about 8 full professors. So we decided that every year another one will be the chairman.
I see.
But the big decisions we will make all together.
Yes.
We will talk to each other so long as we don't agree, which was sometimes not so easy. And I shall be excluded from this chairmanship because of my great merits before. And so I was not chairman for a number of years.
Before I
retired. I was just then one or
one more time. One more time chairman or not?
No. After I think in 65.
I see. And you retired
And I retired in 76. So for 11 years I was more or less one primus inter pares or oldest, me the Dorf Eltest.
That's what I read, that you won the Roger Adams Award in the United States and American Chemical Society, and I saw a little paper clipping where they said that they call you the Dorf Eltest.
The oldest man in the village.
Yes, I found the elder Dorf.
Yeah. That is, so it worked well so far, especially, you know, we had a very able people who got offers from all kinds of foreign universities, for example, from Harvard, several of them, and
from
others.
Who were these, the most prominent people? Eschenmoser,
Arrigoni got offers from Harvard. Jack Danitz got offers from several, from Yale, from
and they didn't accept?
From Cornell. Oh, they were all associate professors at that time.
I see. So,
First, I managed to get them promoted to full professorships. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, even that, perhaps, if they would be always working, so to say, under a chairman, they would perhaps accept this position where they would be independent.
Yes.
And by organizing that collegial chairmanship, that means all of them are equal. There is no, everybody is a chairman only for a year.
Yes.
They don't feel, you know, like be in a dependent position.
They That's not, very important.
Very important, yes. You know, because some of them like to be independent. So I think they would be tempted by an offer in which they would say, well, you will become yourself, you will be a chairman, you can organize things as you like. Always such a group, you have always to consider your colleagues, you know, even in sharing the apparatus, the money, and so on, you always have, and especially if it would be a chairman who would make all important decisions by himself, they would feel perhaps easier to be themselves independent, and they would leave Zurich. And organizing that, I managed to keep them all together. We lost only Professor Heilbronner, who was then who moved to Basel to become professor of physical chemistry at Basel. But
I
all
see,
the other
states. Well, that was very good strategy. It was just the opposite of what Ruschitzka did.
I was the first so-called personal full professor. Mm-hmm. It was a custom here at our school.
Yes.
That it was one chair and one full professor. That means, and we started. I was really the first, so far as I know, perhaps at physics department it was another one, so-called personal full professor.
In addition to him?
In addition to, he was the chairman, but I was full professor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then I was his successor, and first I had two associate professors, and after that we promoted, and then we added few of associate professors more, and then they got such tempting offers, and that was the reason that they were promoted to full professors, and finally we ended up with eight full professors. When we had this rotating chairmanship, they were already eight equivalent full professors.
Yes, I see.
And we lost only one of them to Basel, and that was not so bad, but we didn't lose anybody to Cornell or to Harvard.
Big university in the United States. Are you well funded? How's the funding for research? Does it come partly from industry or from
federal government? We got always quite a reasonable amount of money from the school for teaching and research. But then we were supported. Ruzicka organized that very well because his work was interesting. He was supported strongly by industry, and I continued that.
That was Siba Geigy?
That was Siba at that time, named
Siba. Yes.
Siba. And then Siba Geigy more or less merged with merged. No, we get less from the others.
Siba Geigy.
It was very difficult difficult to work with several firms.
I was
already on the board of Siba, and then later when they merged with Geigy on the board of Siba, or Geigy of the court. In United States, they would call board of directors, which is called Verwaltung.
Yes, yes, and that did not constitute a conflict of interest in any way, or
no? We tried to behave in such a way that there was not a conflict. Not everybody agreed or didn't like.
No.
We that was always our principle, that we shouldn't work on problems which are more or less given to us by industry.
I see.
We didn't have any They didn't say, we are interested in that and that, and you should work on that and that. We always worked what we wanted, and we thought, said, if something practical should come out of our work, of course the firm which supported us will have the priority to use it. It's a very complicated, it needs quite a lot of tact and
understanding
and so on. At that time, it was possible. Today it's much more difficult.
It's more difficult.
But we had then the Swiss Science Foundation appeared, was organized, and quite a lot of money is now given to the Institute. Already I myself got quite a lot of money through Swiss Science Foundation, which is like National Science Foundation in the United States. It is a semi-official organization which supports research, and but you have to more or less to make a project, and the support is only temporary, so you have always to make new projects
and
write reports and proposals
takes
and
a
so
lot
on
time.
But that's like in United States.
Yes.
We have the great advantage compared with United States that we don't pay any overhead to our school. That means if you have a grant from an institution like National Science Foundation or a National Institute of Health in the United States, a great part of that goes to the school as the so-called overhead. That means school takes a part of this money to run the administration and even teaching, and that's not here. So we get we get the money from these institutions, either industry or from the National Science Foundation. We can use this money fully without paying any overhead. So, but we are still supported by industry.
But you did develop some products like I'm thinking of rifamine or rifamine.
Rifamycin, yeah.
Or rifamycin, right,
on ferimycin. Really, yes. We were interested in structures, and industry is interested in the biological activity.
Yes.
They really can use a product without knowing anything about structure. But they can improve the product by knowing structure. They can, if they know the structure, they can predict certain things which they could know. So they are molecular modification. So they are interested in structure. And at that time, they didn't have. It was more difficult. Opportunity to determine the structure in their own laboratories, or that was too expensive for them. So what we did for them, we did the structures. And on the basis of this structure, then they developed it.
Right.
But they really, in some way, it's a very nice cooperation, because they are different interests, but which go parallelly.
Right.
That
nice
means we were interested how the molecules like. They need this structure to do some chemical work or to know about some properties of these compounds which they use biologically. But they did also all biological work for us, which is sometimes also necessary during the isolation and purification and so on. So it was very nice. We had also very nice cooperation with our microbiological research, so-called special botany department under Professor Goyman, who helped us in isolation of microbes which we used for our cultures. So they were also supported by industry, so it was a triangle: industry, microbiology, and organic organic. And each of these groups did his own part of the job, and that was it doesn't work anymore so well as it worked in our times, because everything was smaller, and now
and
so many
personal.
People are competing in this field. Yeah.
And research is so costly now, isn't it?
Research is more, instrumentation is more. You see, I mentioned in some of these lectures and in some historical surveys. It is the chemistry changed by introduction of the physical methods, so much as the art of war changed through invention of firearms. That means in old days they have been people very strong physically and very shrewd and so on, and they became heroes. You know, if you have a good gun, even a very weak man can kill the greatest hero behind the corner, you know, standing behind the corner, and so on. So today, but at the same time, you know, all these arms, when you had just a musket or a bow, and it was very cheap, and everybody could do, could make it himself, you know, and so on, you know. By all these arms, you know, it became, everything became much more research, you know. The cost of research increased by a factor which is something between 10 and 100, depending on that. And that, of course, the result of that is that the people who give money and who are very often not competent ask themselves what this money is used for.
So much.
They want so much, and is it used properly?
Yes, sure.
And so on. And that that makes the whole thing much more complicated.
Right.
Because it's very difficult for these incompetent people to make their mind, especially if they are not too clever. So they want always more and more detailed reports, more and more detailed projects.
Which
and
they
research,
don't
they don't really understand. They have to ask experts. Experts must be, if they are good, you know, they could do something better than, for example, write a report about a very bad project. The man who wrote a bad project will more or less fight. And they have to be very careful what they say, and so on. So it is it's much more complicated, the whole thing. So I lived in during the very good times. By the way, we owe very much to Russians. Before, when the Sputnik, that was in 57, came out, and the Americans decided that they have to spend some money for science, to support science, and Switzerland also. So it was very easy for me to get the necessary funds. We could do whatever we could justify. We never had a lack of money. And now it's not anymore so. Because the money is always more and more tight, and the research is always more and more expensive.
So you really actually lived in a period of great transition in the 50s from this simple classical approach to the modern approach.
To the modern, to the more.
You
know, my predecessor said to Professor Scherer, who was a professor of physics.
I know.
You remember
Professor
Scherer?
Yes, I remember Professor Scherer.
What we need from physicists are stents, nothing else.
Are what?
Stents. No stative.
Oh no, ring stents.
Yeah, but that's changed.
Yes, and that's not
that's
true
changed,
anymore. Indeed,
that's not true anymore.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Could you also briefly tell me something about your relationship with the United States scientists? You have been on so many guest lectures at Harvard, Yale.
At the same time, you know, during my time, you know, I met a lot of people.
Who are the people
I had
you
a very
met?
Oh, there is dozens,
friends,
you know, dozens.
Could you name a few? That would be kind of tie it together.
You know, the whole group at Harvard was always very friendly. We had that, but also the group that was all Professor Woodward, of course, Professor. I don't know in which order, you know, there are now so many.
It doesn't matter, younger.
Professor Westheimer, let us say, of the older, Professor Kistiakowski at Harvard, of the older. We knew very well people at Urbana, Illinois, which was for some time a center that was the senior of them was Adams, you know.
Yes, that's what I wanted to ask you.
Adams was a great friend of Ružička and continued to be a great friend of myself, you know.
Did he work on high membered rings? Large rings?
Not so
because
much. He did few of them. He worked
you
also on
Adams.
Natural compounds.
Natural compounds. And
so he had a great esteem for Ružička. That continued. He was a very good friend. They were very good friends at Cornell, at Yale. It is so difficult to say the names, you know, because
yes,
I don't like to emphasize one because
they
are, younger and older people,
it
you know.
I have,
and they always invite at Madison, Wisconsin, at
University of Berkeley, in
Los Angeles.
Did you know any of the older famous chemists like Lewis?
Gilbert Newton Lewis? No. I never met him. Linus Pauling, I know very well. I have many encounters with him.
He's an older scientist of famous people.
Many of them died. Louis Caesar at Harvard,
yes,
for example.
Yes. Did you have any special friends that visited you here? Or?
Oh, yes. But again, you know, it is so difficult to name one.
Yes,
of them,
because
you
have so
or
many.
Three
so
of those.
Well
there
known
are so many. And they were
States.
Always friendly to us, you know, and from this lecture in Navarre, you know, that you get always through friends, you know, invitations to lecture. I have been altogether, perhaps I counted it once, more than 160 places. A great number of them
more
in the United States.
Places.
I gave lectures.
Yeah, I have the whole list here of your lectures.
But these are only named lectures, you know. These are only lectures which are a certain kind of honor. But I have been invited to many meetings of the Chemical Society. I have been invited to many symposia and so on, you know. That's not mentioned here.
Yes, I see.
And if I think, you know, how bad my English is, I wonder.
It's not bad at all. not after having spoken in English for 2 hours. It couldn't be bad. I met you in Atlantic City at the Stereochemical Symposium of the American Chemical Society. I re-met you.
I remember that occasion very well. It was a big meeting of the American Chemical Society,
right. And to come to a conclusion gradually, first of all, I see that you're still active. You have published a paper on chromatography, separation of enantiomers.
That's now my hobby in some way, you know, liquid-liquid separation, because that was a field which was not...
Thin-layer chromatography liquid or high-pressure liquid?
Only liquid-liquid.
Liquid.
What they say, high pressure liquid. Means liquid solid, you know, really. You have a column, you know, of a solid.
Right.
But that was well developed, but just liquid-liquid extraction, you know, because you don't expect that you will get a high resolution. And you have either to use a ionophore, and we are interested in this field because liquid membranes play a great role in biology, and liquid membranes which will separate enantiomers, which will react to one of the enantiomers biologically active, a biogenic amine or something like that, are interesting from the biological standpoint. So we would like more or less to study certain simple systems where the situation is clearer than in a complicated biological system,
amines.
As a kind of models, for more complicated biological membranes. And we have a cooperation with electrochemists of our laboratory, Professor Simon, you know, who is studying such liquid membranes electrochemically and their behavior electrochemically. So that's more or less the only field I'm now working experimentally.
But
still I have always one PhD, one postdoctorate working in this field
for
with
you.
Me.
Did you write any books?
No. I wrote chapters. But I didn't write a textbook.
You didn't write a textbook.
I remember very early we had a Japanese visitor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very difficult to talk to him because he didn't speak but Japanese. But he spoke few words of German or English. I don't remember. Anyway, at the end of his visit, he said to Ruzicka, "Professor Ruzicka, I think you better chemist than Karel." And Ruzicka was very proud, you know, of that. And then he asked her, "Why do you think that I am greater?" He said, "You never wrote a textbook."
Oh.
So we decided
that's kind of paradox.
that we shall never write a textbook. I wrote chapters for certain monographs, but I never wrote. I am not very good in writing.
Well, it's the bi, tri, quadrilingual background, which is distracting.
It takes me quite a lot of trouble. You know, I write everything five times before I publish, and even then it is imperfect.
Yes.
So to write a book, that is something horrible. The idea of writing a book is something horrible to me.
Well, you're maybe a little bit in limbo because you say you forgot your mother language, and then maybe the next language is not, you're not quite as...
Yes, to write a book, you have to write. Either you have to learn a language very young, or you have to be very talented. Huh? Are you through with your
still running
tape?
I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what is your idea of the future of chemistry or chemical education or both? What you see in store?
Chemistry is such a big field and so important because everything what happens in the world is connected.
This chemistry.
If you think some chemistry takes place and so on, to understand what's going on is so important. It's one of the most important things. Beyond the idea that you do something for the mankind, you do better living and better medicines and so on, but to understand what's going on everywhere in the world, inorganic or organic and so on, is so important.
Yes, it is.
So, we really started only. So I think...
We will never stop doing chemistry
and so on, because before we come to such complicated processes like memory, evidently memory is something chemical.
Evidently.
But we are so far of understanding that.
There's a lot to
and
do
we
too.
Have to do lots of fundamental work, of basic work to understand that. We don't have the necessary tools to study them. But it improves every day. Of course, already I think Einstein said that we live in the time of always more and more perfect methods and more confused aims. We have always to think about what we really want to do. Because the possibilities are now terrible.
Yes, they're frightening.
If you take 100, a chain of 100 amino acids in a protein, and 20 different amino acids, you can make 10 to 130 possible combinations, and there are in the world, so far as we know, there are 10 to 87 atoms. So you and many proteins have several hundreds of amino acids or thousands of amino acids and so on. So the possibility now we have to know, it will never be possible to make all these possible isomeric proteins of only of this small. So the possibilities in many of them you could do this method existing. If you now say I want to have 100 amino acids in a certain sequence combined to a protein, you can do it today.
Yes.
It will take you years to make it,
protein
and several very, very able coworkers. But you will never be able to make all of them. Or if you fail it by very few amino acids, it will not have an activity. Or which one of these should be done?
Well,
shall we spend $1 million to prepare one of these isomers? which will be nothing at the end. Hmm? So these are problems. We have to be clear about the aims, hmm? What we want really to do. We can do now much more than chemists be ever able to do. Hmm? These existing methods, and we improve them every day, make them easier, faster, and so on. But